It's time to rise to the challenge, Captain. The universe demands it.
Hello and welcome to Future Imperfect. I'm your host, Steven C. Phillips, Admiral of the Future Imperfect, and in this episode, I will be covering the latest Choose Your Pain episode of Star Trek Discovery, as it were. And so we're returning to Dark Trek slash New Trek slash Kelvin, whatever, of the Star Trek universe. And yeah, we kind of get into a little bit of different controversies of stupid producers in the show and claiming that this miraculously works out. The episode, I'll get into that first, was probably the most Trek episode we've gotten so far, with playing with the moral dilemma of, is this a sentient being and whatnot. You still can't claim it's new ground. I mean, although what happened at the end is a little disturbing. You'll have to watch it to kind of figure that out. I'm not going to spoil it here. So, getting back to some of the aspects of the timeline, I love how Akiva Goldsmith kind of says that it's not the Kelvin timeline, and says that we are the original timeline with the TV shows and the movies that fit in it, even though comparing the Constitution class ships of 10 years later and the Discovery prototype, which I understand the Discovery is a prototype and everything on it's probably state of the art. However, it works flawlessly, and there's never a problem, it seems. And it appears that everything deviates from canon, which would cause an issue at the end of the 10-year period in the hitting of TOS. And I think it's funny because they use site-to-site transporting a lot. And Anthony Rapp notes that Scotty could do it, and he pointed out that the USS Discovery is a newer ship than the Enterprise, which that's true, but the Enterprise has been refit several times. And you think that that would be a key component that they used. And no, Scotty couldn't do it in the original series because it wasn't a technology. The Kelvin universe did. So, you're wrong. you know, there's also the element of the fact that Lorca is kind of a dictatorish captain. As he's going through his command, and we get to kind of see a little bit of that in the episode where he's just like, my ship, my rules, when the admiral's telling him how to captain his ship when he's amongst admirals. And you see him giving himself the eye shots to kind of make it so that his eyes are okay. And the admiral's like, oh, for God's sakes, Lorca, just get your eyes fixed. And he won't, because there's a sentimental reason behind that. And you find that out while he's in the brig of the Klingon ship with Harry Mudd and Ash Tyler, the officer who's in there with him. So yeah, we get another golden nugget, as it were, from Goldsmith, who explains that episode 9 is a switch and why Discovery is a TVMA. This guy is such a putz. I don't like him at all when it comes to this show. Because he's... Not only is he just... he doesn't seem like he's very well-versed in Star Trek, for one. And that's why it bothers me. And I'm not saying he has to be, but it kind of helps. And then you get this writer's room. I don't understand what this writer's room consists of. But if they're the New Age Trekkies from the Kelvin universe, then they've got an entirely different exposure than the people that grew up with it. So that's where I'm seeing a lot of inconsistencies, I believe. But yeah, he's saying that's episode 9 is where it's going to split, because we're going to have January to November to wrap up the first part of season 1. And then season 2 starts in January, obviously. And then he explains it like CBS calling them two sweeps. This is sort of meta arc, which is the War with the Klingons. But within that meta arc, there are two mini meta arcs or micro arcs. So the first sweep of those just naturally fell out in episode 9. So we moved it, no more or less mysterious, sadly. And then he's all for the incorporating of horror and other genres into Trek, which is why you have the mature rating. Especially with the threatening, circumstances with Burnham. And he's talking about how the Trouble with Tribbles, Piece of the Action, Corporal Might Maneuver, and Naked Time have different tonal differences. Well, yeah, episodes are going to have that emotional tonality difference and be appropriate for the story itself, but it was very horror in the last couple episodes. We get a little bit of that in this one too, despite everything. They're kind of pushing the envelope with the graphical mangled bodies. And this episode they had swearing in it, where Tilly goes, "That was effing cool." And then the engineer goes, "It was effing cool." And I'm like, really? You had to force it? So now they're also confirming that season 2 is looking more likely, and Kurtzman confirms big spoilers and more. Obviously, they're going to do the Mirror Universe, which it looks like they're already starting to set up in this next episode with Lieutenant Stamets. You'll get the idea what happens in the end of the episode. And Jonathan Frakes is directing one episode featuring the classic Trek element. But they're going to have multiple episodes, which, again, kind of leads me to wonder, because Kirk was supposedly the first one to encounter the Mirror Universe, and Enterprise was basically the episodes took place in a different timeline, they took place in the Mirror Universe. It wasn't anybody from the Prime Universe over there. So you were seeing it from the perspective of purely the Mirror Universe. If this is to cross over, Kirk is the first documented case of going to the Mirror Universe. Now, if this crew manages to go there and it's not told to Starfleet and they keep it in their memory banks here on the ship, and then it's never kind of gone beyond that, not to mention they can call out the computer and have it do commands, whereas Kirk had to go up to a bulkhead and press something to get the computer to access it. I don't know. There's so many different inconsistencies technologically and with storyline. Like the Mirror Universe, Kirk was the first. So I understand Picard and the rest didn't go that way, but still. And then there's all kinds of other questions, like if the Klingons have cloaking, why didn't the rest of the fleet have them? Or why didn't they recover the ship 6 months after, or before, you know, right after the battle, pick it up? And who developed it? Why is it the only vessel that has it? You know, what's the deal with the creature of the tardigrade? What's the story behind that? I don't know, there's just and the dash drive just reminds me of like pre-transwarp technology, except it's like instantaneous. It's like the power of a Q. It's kind of sick how they're using this dash drive. So they send the ship on a magic mushroom ride and we get to the other side of the galaxy, man. I don't know, this show is the writing. Is constantly, the writers insist the show does not contradict the original series, but the technology would be recognizable even if they space aged it up for the series. I don't know. I'm so they're saying even within the original series in The Next Generation, we've seen ourselves go back and update. So digitally, we went back in and made the planets look better and the ships look better, and purely just pure opportunity. So fundamentally, it's subject to interpretation. How far is too far? Now, if they went back and they fixed a lot of the stuff in the original, then, you know, and made it make sense by editing the original stuff, then sure. But it doesn't remain true to the technology of the original series. Despite the fact it was made in the 60s and this wasn't thought of, it doesn't fit. They're using technology we have now, which I get it. But why go back to the original series? Why not go to the time period between the Enterprise B and the C? Or go beyond the Enterprise E? Or the F? Go in the mid-25th century. Start with something we haven't seen. Because even in Star Trek Online, we don't really get that. So, I don't know. There's a lot of different aspects with that. And then they say the Star Trek reboot films helped Discovery push the edge of canon because it's not canon. They pushed it because it's an alternate canon, which Kurtzman is responsible for, along with Abrams and Orci. He's, you know, I don't think it's the Kelvin universe. I honestly don't. But I don't think it's the original timeline either. It's like their new rebooted universe of the new Trek or something to that degree. And you can't push the edge of canon. You can if you have good reason, is what Kurtzman says. But there's not a good reason for this. It should have been much later that they came up with this. Like, I feel like the B to C of Enterprise timeline, I think that would have been the best timeline, because you would have had all this new technology getting created, and that's what ends up in the Enterprise D, because you didn't have a lot of it in the original series films. And then all of a sudden you get to the Enterprise D and you have all this technology that's new. So I kind of wonder what we would have gotten had they moved it there. There's still a lot of fan rage either way, no matter what way you're looking at it. And then they were talking about making the tardigrade a Starfleet member, which, whoop-de-doo. But Choose Your Pain, you get Harry Mudd, and they kind of kept him kind of very similar. They got Lieutenant Ash Tyler showing up as a POW. And then waiting for someone like Lorca to show up, and then they work together to get out. The tardigrade, I'm not going to spoil it, but it's interesting. This episode was probably the most Trek, even though it was darker. It was probably the more, like, Trek questioning that we've gotten in some time. You get more of a Sisko vibe from Lorca in this one, obviously, because he's no way Kirk or Picard. And then you get the precursor to Harry Mudd and how he ends up in the original series, kind of. Doesn't showing him escape or anything, but then the end of the episode was just trippy. I think, and I want to say that it's like a mirror universe thing. But yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of sick of the prequels and alternate timelines. I don't think that they needed to do this timeline. I would have loved to have seen them do it later on. Or heck, even do a different species. Like, go from you know, maybe the Cardassians up, or have Fleet Admiral Riker, or and have Jonathan Frakes reprise as Fleet Admiral. Then you could have some TNG, DS9, and Voyager people guesting here or there based on the story. You know, new Delta Quadrant. You know, maybe a ship that's in the Delta Quadrant or in the Gamma Quadrant. I don't know. I think that we could have had a lot of different avenues that we just weren't presented with. Because even with going to the future, we have Star Trek Online, which is canon. So, I mean, it's unless they're planning on, like, rebooting the entire universe, I just don't see how this works. Because a lot of the ships we've seen so far are more advanced than anything that was in the original series. So, I don't know. I think CBS has just kind of lost it because they're acting like the original series looks too old fashioned and coming up with this new shiny uniforms with the little Starfleet Delta on all of their like little patterns on the uniforms, because they've been doing that since the Kelvin reboot. And the main thing that people keep saying is stop whining. They had to change it because no one would want to watch it with the, you know, the old fashioned look. And I kind of beg to differ, because you still get plenty of people that are clamoring for things like Star Trek Continues or Axanar or that old style uniform. I personally love the old look more than what we've received. And I know that it's being picky. I realize that. And I'm not trying to be like that. But I think that when we're getting into this series, I think that there was a lot more room they could have taken it if it was in a different timeline. However, that being said, I do have to say that the show is... I do think that the show is pretty good for what it is. So in that regard, I think that we're in good hands as far as it being a reboot and just playing in that time span. But this episode was actually really good. It played with the moral dilemma of the tardigrade and its sentience, and Burnham getting into it with Saru, and you had a little bit more of the cast melding together instead of just kind of showing up, which I realized that was going to happen with being only, you know, this many episodes in. It's going to take a full season for them all to mesh if they survive that long. So I guess we'll just kind of see what happens. But I definitely think that we get to see more of the layer peeled back on Lorca and the why he is so dark and why he is so pressing on having to do things a certain way, and why he's trying to break the Klingons. And it doesn't explain his experience personally with them, or how he ended up with all those memorabilia of Gorn and Klingon stuff. Some people have speculated that he's from the Mirror Universe himself, and that's why he's the way he is, but I sincerely doubt it. Especially now after this episode. But I would like to know more. They did name drop with the computer of the most prolific captains. They had Matthew Decker, who is Commodore Decker later on in the original series. They name dropped Captain Robert April, the first captain of the Enterprise. Jonathan Archer, the NX-01 Enterprise. They drop Giorgio of the Shenzhou as one of the most prolific captains of Starfleet. And then they list Captain Christopher Pike, the current captain of the USS Enterprise. It would be nice to see Christopher Pike and the Starship kind of make its debut. However, I have a feeling it would look like the episode The Cage, with all of the goofy stuff sticking out and not playing up to par with what we've got here. So I guess we'll just have to see what happens. So I think that about rounds it out for this episode. I was going to talk about the Orville, but the show is really good. I do still support that 100%. It's kind of... They had an infiltration episode this last episode, and I think that it was... I think that it was interesting how they did it with the holographic technology and had them kind of infiltrating and showing the repercussions, and it was very TNG-styled in that what they've done this particular day on their mission and how it diverted to a different thing with the space vampires. It kind of showed that they'll be held to pay later and not necessarily right now. So while they have a good conscience right now, it may not necessarily play out the way they'd planned later on because of the seeds they've sown at this point. So I think that they're starting to hit their stride on that show as well. So, and some of the jokes, although repetitive, fit really well. Like the joke of Avis, they're the Krill God. Malloy says, isn't that a rental company on Earth? And there's multiple jokes thrown in, but it's more of the witty, you know, sarcasm when they're, you know, pitted in a tough situation. So it's more fitting here than some of the random bridge talk or some of the random stuff that's popped up on the show. So that rounds about for this week. So until next time, engage Warp Factor 8 to the USS Future Imperfect on the non-mirror universe in the Prime timeline. Until then.
Look at this place. Picard rubbing elbows with Kirk. Romulans and Ferengi arguing like old hens. I should have known better than to trust a mortal. You're incapable of rising above the mundane.